Hello, and welcome to Words on Film, the spoken word podcast dedicated to moving pictures. I'm Dan Burke, your host and movie critic, and I'm here to tell you exactly what I think of some of the latest movies out right now.
For today's show, I have two brand new movies to review for you. A third one is new-ish to streaming, although it came out earlier this year. It just didn't get as wide a release because of the pandemic shutting down all movie theaters across the world. But we're going to get to those reviews in a moment. But here on Words on Film, I delve a little bit into movie news. I mainly specialize in movie reviews, but whenever a significant figure in the movie business passes away, I always make sure to note their passing as well as acknowledge their legacy. And this death happened actually a couple of hours after I did my show last week. I do my show every Saturday, or at least I record it every Saturday. Every Saturday morning at around 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And it was after that that I found out, very unfortunately, that Sean Connery passed away on October 31st, 2020, at the age of 90. Now, it's not too surprising that he died. I mean, after all, he was 90. And the last film he did was The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which came out 17 years ago. And since then, he formally retired from acting, besides just doing some cameos here and there in some TV shows and one film, which was called Sir Billy, which came out in 2012. That's an animated film. And apparently Sean Connery was the lead voice in that film, but that film has gotten really bad reviews. So Sean Connery is enough of a great actor to have deserved better than to have his last films be The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen or Sir Billy. But still, he was in a number of excellent films if you take those films out of his repertoire. The movie he did before The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was Finding Forrester, which I think, if that had been his last film, that would have been a great note off of which to retire. But he died in his sleep on October 31st in the Bahamas, specifically in the Lyford Key community of Nassau. And his death was announced by his family, but they did not disclose the cause of his death. I hope he didn't die of COVID, but he could have. But either way, at the age of 90, I mean, he's lived a long life. And I could go over his entire repertoire. I'll try to keep this brief because I have some other things about which to discuss for this show. But it actually is really amazing that, of course, he originated the role of James Bond, first in the movie Dr. No, and probably most prominently in movies like Goldfinger, Thunderball, Diamonds Are Forever, and one last time in 1983 for the other unofficial James Bond film besides Casino Royale, the first one. The first Casino Royale had Peter Sellers playing James Bond as well as other actors playing the same role. But Sean Connery reprised his role as James Bond in Never Say Never Again. It's considered an unofficial James Bond film because it wasn't released by MGM, which is the studio that usually releases James Bond films. I believe that Never Say Never Again was released by Paramount. I haven't seen that film, but it's mostly not people's favorite James Bond films. What is amazing is after his 60s and 70s roles, not just in James Bond movies, but in other films as well, he kind of created a renaissance in a sense, or made an unlikely comeback in the movie Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And being a child of the 80s, that was the first Sean Connery movie I ever saw. And he had a little bit of a comeback before that, actually, in movies like Highlander and the movie for which he won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor, The Untouchables, and he was great in that movie. Interestingly enough, he's a Scottish actor, and yet he played an Irishman in that film. Even weirder, he played a Russian in The Hunt for Red October, which is another film that created, was more of a solidification of his being on the A-list. And he's had a number of other films. Some of his best films were in the 90s, movies like Medicine Man, Rising Sun, The Rock, and of course I mentioned, this isn't a 90s movie, but it's pretty close, Finding Forrester, not to mention his last film of the 90s, Entrapment. He had a good life and a great career, it looks like, and also it says something about his status that in 1989, before he turned 60, he was voted by People magazine as Sexiest Man of the Year. That's not something I usually highlight, but that is quite a notable accomplishment for somebody who is not usually in that same age category. But I absolutely salute Sean Connery. I really wish that I had been able to acknowledge his life as well as his death in my previous show last week, but as I said, I didn't find out about his death until after I did my show, so I wanted to acknowledge it right here and say, Sean Connery, Words on Film salutes you. Welcome back to Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke. The first movie I'm going to be reviewing for you is Operation Christmas Drop, which is a Netflix original that premiered on the platform on November 5th, 2020. And this is not the only new Christmas movie that has premiered on Netflix, and it certainly isn't the only new Christmas movie that's premiered on the Hallmark Channel already. It's not even Thanksgiving. We're weeks away from Thanksgiving, and already these Christmas movies are popping up. I'm not necessarily saying that I have a problem with that, but I am kind of cautious because I don't want to waste my time watching a formulaic film. So, admittedly, when I turned on Operation Christmas Drop, I knew it was going to be a romantic comedy. And I knew that it was going to have, or I assumed it had some formula to it, or that it was formulaic. But here's what the movie's about. Congressional aide Erica, who's played by Cat Graham, foregoes family Christmas to travel at her boss's behest. Her boss, by the way, is a congresswoman by the name of Congresswoman Bradford. She doesn't have a first name in this movie. And she's actually played by Virginia Madsen, who we haven't seen in a little while. It's been a little while. But anyway, Erica travels to Micronesia in the South Pacific at a beachside Air Force base there. And she clashes at first with Captain Andrew Jantz, who's played by a young actor by the name of Alexander Ludwig, who knows her assignment is finding reasons to defund the facility. And the significant part about this Air Force is the name of the movie, Operation Christmas Drop. Now, Operation Christmas Drop, I thought, was fictional, but it actually, as they explain in the epilogue of the film, it's a tradition that started in 1952 that serves as a training mission for the U.S. Air Force. And it has since become the longest-running U.S. Department of Defense mission in full operation, and the longest-running humanitarian airlift in the world. And it's sponsored by local communities in Guam, which is a U.S. territory that is near Micronesia. And it's primarily conducted from Anderson Air Force Base and Yokota Air Base. It's a collaboration between the U.S. Air Force as well as Japan and Australia their air forces take part in such a mission, and they target Micronesia. What they do is they take boxes full of goods and supplies, as well as some other things like toys, which might not be life-saving, but are still good things to give away at Christmas, and they fly above Micronesia and parachute these boxes to the natives there. And as I was watching this film, I actually gained a really sincere appreciation for Operation Christmas Drop. And I did think that this movie refreshingly and surprisingly averted some of the cliches of particular Hallmark Christmas films. There is an obvious romance that's going on between Cat Graham and Alexander Ludwig's characters, but what I think differentiated this from other Hallmark films is that, first of all, it didn't take place in a polished, stylized New York City, like most Hallmark films do. Secondly, the woman in the film, Cat Graham, is very smart, and she's not, she has some dimension to her character. She's not so professional that she's uptight, but she's also not bland either. And I can say especially the same thing about Alexander Ludwig. And let me give you just a brief introduction to some of these actors if you don't know who they are. Cat Graham is a very attractive actress, I must say. She was actually born in Switzerland, but I think she's considered an American. She is an actress, singer, dancer, and producer, so she's kind of a quadruple threat there. She actually did have some acting roles, prominent acting roles, in Hallmark original films, such as The Holiday Calendar, but she's also been in some other more credible films like How It Ends, which was a Netflix original that premiered 2 years ago. She also played Jada Pinkett in the Tupac Shakur biopic All Eyes on Me, which I thought was better than most critics thought it was, but it didn't get quite the attention it deserved. And she was also in a film this year, which came out in limited release, which I didn't get to see. It was a film directed by RZA, the Wu-Tang Clan, called Cutthroat City. Maybe I'll be able to get that film or see that film, but I can't guarantee it. And Alexander Ludwig has also had some prominent acting roles despite only being 28 years old. He has somewhat of a familiar face. He was in the original Hunger Games movies where he played Cato. He also was in the Mark Wahlberg film Lone Survivor. And he was recently in the film Bad Boys for Life, which came out earlier this year and was an unexpected box office hit pre-pandemic. And he hasn't had a lead role before this, but I really liked him in this film. And I think that what differentiates his performance here from other Hallmark movies is that he's not bland. He actually has a sense of humor, not to mention a big heart, which is why he's doing this Operation Christmas Drop mission. And the plot of this film is seeing how this congressional aide, played by Cat Graham, is trying to look for reasons to shut down this Air Force base at the behest of Virginia Madsen's character. And I don't particularly think that is, I don't want to say unrealistic, but I don't think that the U.S. government, even with the president we have in office right now, is quick to shut a program like this down, especially considering that it's been going on for literally 58 years, with this probably being its 58th. I don't think they're going to cancel this because of COVID. If they do, that would be extremely sad. But I actually loved the scenes, not necessarily when Cat Graham and Alexander Ludwig begin to have sparks fly between them. Those were sincere, and they do have great chemistry together, but I saw those scenes coming. The scenes I really liked was when Alexander Ludwig's character is taking Cat Graham's character all over the island of Micronesia and introducing her to the natives there. I thought there were some very sweet and sincere moments there. And there's a great scene where Alexander Ludwig takes a ukulele and starts playing Christmas tunes for the natives. I really liked that. I also liked some of the supporting actors in this movie who played fellow Air Force privates, such as Trezo Mahora and Bethany Brown, amongst others. And it was great to see Virginia Madsen again in a movie after a little while. In fact, she had a bit of a streak going on in the early aughts when she was in movies like Sideways, but we haven't seen her in a while, and you could probably see her and compare her to certain other congresspeople. I'm not going to say who, but there was actually a pretty good twist at the end. And I'm not saying it's a plot twist, but it's more like a character twist where she actually visits the island of Micronesia because her her congressional aide is allegedly not doing her job. But the circumstances of her going to Micronesia and checking on her congressional aide is not particularly realistic. And maybe I saw it coming, but the way it resolves itself is really neat. And I did not expect to love Operation Christmas Drop because I saw the word Christmas in the title and thought Christmas romantic comedy, which it is. But it is a very good film. I think that Cat Graham and Alexander Ludwig in particular sell this film just by playing round characters who you can really get behind as the story progresses. And Operation Christmas Drop gets my rating of a knockout. It is a very welcome Christmas gift in a year that, in a crazy year like the one we've been having. It's a really good addition to the repertoire, to Netflix's original film roster. And it's not a typical Christmas romantic comedy that's as formulaic as the stuff you'd find on primarily the Hallmark Channel, but also on Lifetime, and even some Netflix originals have kind of jumped on the Hallmark Channel bandwagon. Now, what works for the Hallmark Channel, I've been mentioning the Hallmark Channel again and again, especially as Christmas is coming closer. What works for the Hallmark Channel obviously works for them. They're not losing any money making these films, nor are they losing any potential viewers, but I recognize a formula when I see it, and Operation Christmas Drop follows a formula to a certain degree, but in the end, it tells a great story, and I think it makes anybody who's watching this film appreciate more the service that the Air Force does, particularly in remote places like Micronesia. And what could be better than that? Welcome back to Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke. The next movie I'm going to be reviewing for you is Rogue City, which is a film that takes place in the city of Marseille in France, and it is directed by and written by Olivier Marchal. And this is a very masculine film. Even people who don't particularly like to read the bottom of the screen but still love a Schwarzenegger or Dwayne Johnson action flick might get into this one. I like a Schwarzenegger or Dwayne Johnson action flick as much as the next guy, but unfortunately, Rogue City didn't quite do it for me. Its original title, which is shown in the opening here, was actually Bronx, B-R-O-N-X, like the borough in New York City, which might confuse some viewers. So Rogue City was a good English name change for this film. And I'm not exactly sure what Bronx means in French. I never took French when I was in school, so I don't know. I don't know how the Bronx in New York City got its name, and I don't exactly know if Marseille in France is known as the Bronx in France. I don't know. I can't answer for the original title, but Rogue City is a good name change. Rogue City is about a loyal cop who's caught in the crosshairs of police corruption and Marseille's warring gangs, who must protect his squad by taking matters into his own hands. This loyal cop, by the way, is played, is named Richard Vronsky, and he's played by Lanik Gotry. And there are no particularly well-known actors to American audiences except for Jean Reno, who plays a police chief by the name of Ange Leonetti. And even though he has an obvious Italian name, he is indeed French. But this movie has a lot of violence. As I said before, it certainly is a very masculine film, but unfortunately, from a storytelling aspect, it is particularly confusing. And I am one of those film critics, actually film fans, I should say, who watches films from all over the world, and I don't particularly mind reading the bottom of the screen to know what the characters are saying. But in this case, I don't know if it was just how much I had to read at the bottom of the screen that made the plot of this film confusing, or if it was just the fact that everybody in the film, except for our main character, was corrupt that particularly confused me. But I couldn't really see the loyal cop as somebody who's loyal. Loyal to whom? Is he loyal to his community? Is he loyal just to the police? I didn't quite know, and I wasn't able to extrapolate to whom he was loyal in as I was watching this film. He's somebody who's not particularly innocent himself, and when all is said and done, I wasn't sure for whom to root as I was watching this film. It was a lot of spoken word exposition and not a lot of showing in this film. I didn't know who was good, who was bad. I just knew who got killed as all the bullets were flying. And nothing really shocked me in this film as it was progressing. I will say, however, that there was a scene in the very beginning of the film. At first, after some of the opening credits, you see a black screen, you hear bullets, and you also, after these shots are fired, I shouldn't say you hear bullets, you hear shots fired, and then afterwards you hear a woman make this blood-curdling scream, and it's at this point where the first scene is a house on the coast of France, and you see a guy with a gun walking down a spiral staircase. And I'm not going to tell you what happens next, but this sets in motion the tone of the film, which I think is appropriate. It certainly sets itself off as a grim film where people, either good or bad, lose their lives. But the setup to this scene is great. However, when the movie cuts back to 3 weeks earlier, there are things that happen within the film that don't seem particularly realistic. But then again, I'm not an expert on law enforcement, particularly European law enforcement. After this gruesome scene where somebody gets shot, actually a few people get shot, and we cut back 3 weeks later to this loyal cop escorting a man in prison who's visiting his terminally ill wife, who's presumably dying of cancer. And he is very sincere to her, and he tells her how much he loves her, but he's about to put a pillow over her head when this loyal cop says, "You're not allowed to do that." Well, no kidding, he's about to commit murder. Euthanasia. But then he said, and then the guy who's in prison, who's visiting his dead wife and is about to kill his dying wife, says, "You can leave the room." And the guy just says, "Okay." So he gets out of the room, waits a couple of minutes, and you hear some muffled screams, and then his wife is dead. It is a mercy kill, but it's one that's probably unlikely to happen in reality. And the guy is in a hospital, obviously visiting his sick wife, and there are doctors there who can examine the patient and realize that she has been suffocated. Granted, she's terminally ill with cancer and she was going to die anyway, but even still, I just don't see that kind of mercy kill happening with a police officer around. I suppose it could happen, but not without consequences. And I think this sets the movie on a questionable note that unfortunately doesn't get any less questionable as the film progresses. As a matter of fact, the most questionable parts of this film are not necessarily the morals of the loyal cop who's supposed to be the hero of this film, but it's just about everyone else. You're not sure for whom to root. You're not sure for whom not to root. And it just becomes a confusing, muddled mess that really should have been better than it ultimately was. I like seeing foreign films. I don't mind reading the bottom of the screen to determine what the characters in the film are saying, but I doubt that it was the subtitles for an American like me, who can't speak very many words of French, that confused me. I think it was just about everything else. And Rogue City gets my rating of a strikeout. I do think that the violence in this film got your attention. I also really liked the cinematography, not only the helicopter aerial shots, but also the shots of Marseille in this film, making it look like a dingy city. I'm not sure if that's accurate, but there probably are dingy parts of Marseille, and there probably are gangs in Marseille as well. Marseille is not as celebrated as Paris, so there's probably some corruption going on there. And this movie isn't meant to be realistic, but it should have been clearer. And even though it is an action film that has some notable action sequences, it needed a much better story as well as better characters. Welcome back to Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke. The next movie I'm going to be reviewing for you is I Am Woman, which is named after the song by Helen Reddy, which came out in the early 1970s and served as the unofficial anthem for the third wave feminist movement of that period. And it's not just about the song, it's also about the life of Helen Reddy, particularly when she moves to New York City with her young daughter in the early 60s after having won a contest in Australia. And it shows her struggling to be a singer in 1960s New York, which is not particularly easy to do. But she does have some allies, first in a music journalist by the name of Lillian Roxon, who's played by fellow Australian actress Danielle McDonald, as well as a charismatic man who offers to manage her career by the name of Jeff Wald, who's played by Evan Peters. And Lillian Roxon and Jeff Wald feel like composite characters, but they're actually real people. And I should also mention that Helen Reddy is played by an actress by the name of Tilda Cobham Hervey, who does not look exactly like Helen Reddy, but I think she bears a striking resemblance, rather she has a competent acting role in this film. She's acted in several other films before. I don't know if she is actually a native Australian. IMDb doesn't tell me that, but she's been in several other movies of which I've seen. She was in Hotel Mumbai, which was a great film about the attack from Al-Qaeda terrorists on the Indian Hotel Mumbai in 2008. She's also been in other films like 52 Tuesdays, One-Eyed Girl, and A Field to Being a 12-Year-Old, all of which came out over the last 10 years or so. But I believe this is her first lead role in a movie, and she does well. She particularly does well in scenes with Danielle McDonald, and this is the first time I've seen Danielle McDonald actually play an Australian woman. Danielle McDonald is an Australian actress, but she's been playing Americans in movies like Patty Cakes, which is an underrated film that came out in 2017, as well as the Netflix original Dumplin', where she played Jennifer Aniston's daughter. And you could definitely, it plays on the idea that the movie Dumplin', that Jennifer Aniston and Danielle McDonald are so mismatched. They're mismatched in terms of the way they look, and they're also mismatched personality-wise. But I like Danielle McDonald. She is a fantastic actress, and she adds a lot to this movie. I did like Evan Peters as Jeff Wald, but this movie ultimately felt like it got consumed with the idea that when Jeff Wald and Helen Reddy were married, Jeff Wald was sometimes physically and mostly emotionally abusive to Helen Reddy, particularly when he was under the influence of drugs. But it's one of those things that doesn't really mesh very well with the rest of the film. First, there's a scene where he is being really cruel to Helen Reddy, and then there's another scene where Helen Reddy is performing one of her songs in front of an audience. And the musical performances are played like live concerts, which is fine to a certain degree, but these kind of scenes have to be woven into the narrative. And I felt like the movie just put itself on pause just to show a musical performance. And I think that took away from the film. There are other biopics, like, for instance, some of the greatest ones include Ray, Bohemian Rhapsody, What's Love Got to Do with It, Straight Outta Compton, that take these musical performances and tie them into the story. In other words, it's not just a musical performance you could see at a concert. It also has to do with the narrative, or it ties very well into a montage. And I feel like this movie didn't do that particularly well. And there are also highlights of Helen Reddy's career that this movie skipped over. For instance, it shows her performing, as you might expect. I mean, that was her primary, that was Helen Reddy's primary role as a singer. But I was very surprised that it skipped over some of the movies she did, like Airport 1975 or Pete's Dragon, the latter of which was a decidedly mediocre film, probably one of the Disney Company's most mediocre films. But Helen Reddy in particular added greatness to that film. And that says a lot for a film where she had previous very little acting experience. I wish they could have tied that into the film as well. I also seriously doubted that the song I Am Woman, which serves as a central focus to this film, which shouldn't come as too much of a surprise because the movie is, after all, called I Am Woman. And that was it wasn't Helen Reddy's only hit, but it was the one that certainly had the most cultural impact all around the world. But I did actually doubt the scene where she is, along with her husband Jeff Wald, in a meeting with music executives, and she's talking about how she wants to include it on the album, and these male music executives are saying, well, it sounds particularly aggressive. I doubt that happened. I'm not doubting that sexism was rampant in the music industry then and still is to this day. I'm not doubting that at all. What I am doubting is that there were males in the music industry, particularly at her label, who just saw this or heard the song and scoffed at it, saying, oh, it's too aggressive. I sincerely doubt that, because if you actually hear the song I Am Woman, it does have a charge to it, but it's not male hating and it's not overly aggressive like these executives said it was or in the movie. So I feel like that was embellished, and I can't really speak particularly to how realistic this movie is. It's okay, but, and I do think that the principal actors, Tilda Cobham Hervey, Danielle McDonald, and Evan Peters, do an okay job, or rather, the two women, as I mentioned, Tilda Cobham Hervey and Danielle McDonald, do the best job in this film. Evan Peters, I think, could have done a better job if he was given more to do and wasn't quite as flat a character as he was. But another problem with I Am Woman is the fact that it did come out earlier this year. Its official release date in the United States was September 11th, 2020. And one significant part about this film, or rather the release of this film, is that Helen Reddy herself died on September 29th. What she died of, I don't exactly know, but she died at the age of 78. And it is really unfortunate that she did. I don't know her exact cause of death, because that hasn't been released to the public. She did suffer from Addison's disease and dementia in her later years, which may have been the cause of her death. It may not have been, but I really wish that kind of information would be released. But one problem is the epilogue of the film, where it says that Helen Reddy still lives in Los Angeles near her two children. That should have been updated, especially since it got released on Netflix a little while ago, but not being a Netflix release. But even still, that should have been updated, considering how close a proximity Helen Reddy's death was to the release of this film. And I'm also curious if she ever saw the film or what she would have thought of it, but I may never know that answer. But I Am Woman is not one of the best biopics I've seen. It's not the worst, but I still give it my rating of a strikeout. It is lifted by good acting performances by the likes of Tilda Cobham Hervey and Danielle McDonald. Evan Peters does a serviceable job with what he's given, but the problem is not the acting performances in this movie. The problem is the structure of the film. I felt like it left too much of Helen Reddy's significant life out. We all know that I Am Woman was a significant, groundbreaking song that served as the theme music for the third wave of feminism, particularly in America, arguably all over the world. But I really wanted to know more about Helen Reddy herself. And I suppose instead of watching this film, I could probably look on Wikipedia to find out other things. But this is not one of the best biopics I've seen, and has more to do with the structure of the story than by the people who acted in it. Welcome back to the show, Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke. And now that I've reviewed all the movies I have to review for you for this show, it's now time for me to get into a segment about what movies are coming out on streaming. Normally I do this with movies in theaters, but even though some theaters have opened up, there are some movie theaters that actually have closed their doors again as the the pandemic is still sweeping this country and infecting more people. It's really sad. But I just want to say to all of you out there, I miss the movie theaters as much as you do. I miss going into a movie theater, shutting off my phone, and giving my undivided attention to what's on the big screen in front of me. But for my safety and for all of your safeties, that is going to have to wait. So I'm plugging streaming show or streaming movies rather because it's safer. And there are a lot of really good movies to be streamed on these platforms like Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, Amazon Prime. I'm not plugging any of them necessarily, but I'm letting you know what's going to be coming out this next week, being from Monday, November 9th to Friday, November 13th. I'll tell you all about that. So on Netflix, there is nothing new in terms of films coming out on Monday, November 9th or Tuesday, November 10th. Season 2 of Undercover is premiering on Monday, November 9th, in case you're interested. There are also series premieres of shows on Tuesday, November 10th, such as Dash and Lily and Trash Truck. Trash Truck in particular sounds like an interesting series. I don't know what it's about, but it will be premiering on Netflix on Tuesday, November 10th. So if you would like, you could check that out. But let's check out the movies that are premiering on Netflix on Wednesday, November 11th, Veterans Day. There's a comedy special that's called Auntie Donna's Big Ol' House of Fun. And I don't review comedy specials or stand-up comedy on this show, particularly because, not because I'm against stand-up comedy or anything like that, but I just find that stand-up comedy is very simple. It's either funny or it isn't. And I can't make any comments about the way the stand-up comedy special is shot. It is what it is, in my opinion. And it doesn't really serve as enough of a catalyst for me to tell you exactly what I think about certain comedy specials. As I said, they're either funny or they're not. I do make an exception for comedy movies, rather stand-up comedy movies that are released to theaters, like, for instance, ones by Kevin Hart, for instance, but not ones on Netflix. The ones you find on Netflix are the same ones you see on Comedy Central Presents. It just is what it is. Also premiering on Wednesday, November 11th, is one film that's called What We Wanted, and I am looking that movie up right now as I'm speaking. And let me tell you what it is about. It looks like it is a foreign film. It's directed by Ulrike Koffler, who is a director whose origin, at least where he's from, I don't know. The movie stars Lavinia Wilson, Elias Mbarek, and Anna Untenberger. I don't know these actors, but it sounds like they are Scandinavian. Actually, Lavinia Wilson is a German actress. It actually says on IMDb that she was born in 1980 in West Germany. And you do, I mean, West Germany and East Germany is not, they're not separate countries like they were when the Berlin Wall was up. But if you were a child in Germany who was born in the 70s or 80s, yeah, chances are you were born in either East Germany or West Germany. But anyway, What We Wanted is a German film that tells the story of a couple facing fertility issues who find their marriage tested when they're on vacation to a Sardinian resort, and the family next door only adds to the tension. This could be a romantic drama. It could also be a horror film, but it is labeled as a drama. And this is a Netflix original. It will be premiering on Wednesday, November 11th. This is a film I will try to check out, and I'll let you know what I think on next week's show. The other media that is premiering on Netflix on Wednesday, November 11th include a series premiere of a show called The Liberator, and another show, which is foreign, which is premiering, which is called A Queen is Born, or in its, well, I'm not going to tell you the foreign title of this movie because I don't know what nationality it is, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce the words. So what we wanted is the one film that is premiering that's not a comedy special on Wednesday, November 11th on Netflix. There is one film that is a Netflix original that will be premiering on Thursday, November 12th, and it is called Ludo. And Ludo sounds like either somebody's name or a foreign word. I don't know which. But it is directed by Anurag Basu. And Anurag Basu is an Indian director. And by that I mean he is from India. He is a Bollywood director. And I assume that this film, Ludo, is a Bollywood film. But it is a dark comedy anthology which was supposed to be center on unavoidable... This synopsis was written by somebody who doesn't speak English. Let me read this to you without cracking up. A dark comedy anthology, simple enough, which was supposed to be center on Which was supposed to be center on unavoidable jeopardize of life and has four different stories set in quintessential Indian metro. I'm not even going to try to translate that broken English, but it's a dark comedy anthology, a Bollywood film, so it probably includes singing and dancing. I don't know if I'm going to check that film out, but I have reviewed Bollywood or Indian films on my show before, but they're few and far between. But since it's easily accessible on Netflix, I might check it out. But the three other films that are going to be making an appearance on Netflix on Thursday, November 12th include Fruitvale Station, Graceful Friends, and Prom Night. Now, there are a couple of films that are called Prom Night, and I'm not sure if these films are which film it's going to be. There's a Prom Night that was made in 1980, which starred Leslie Nielsen and Jamie Lee Curtis. It's best known for being Jamie Lee Curtis's probably second best known horror film besides, you guessed it, Halloween. And there was a movie that came out in 2008 also called Prom Night, which I assume was a remake of the 1980 film, but I'm not entirely sure about that. That one starred Brittany Snow and Scott Porter. One of those films will be making an appearance on Netflix, interestingly enough, after Halloween and before most people have proms, which is kind of interesting. I hope the 1980 version will be appearing on Netflix, but I don't entirely know. But let me tell you about Fruitvale Station. Fruitvale Station is a movie that came out in 2013. It came out around the time that I was first developing this show, so I didn't get a chance to see it, but this movie was Michael B. Jordan's breakout role. It tells the true story of a guy by the name of Oscar Grant, who was a 22-year-old Bay Area resident who crosses paths with friends, enemies, families, and strangers on the last day, i.e. December 31st, 2008. I'm not going to tell you exactly what happens to Oscar Grant III. You could probably look it up. But this film also co-stars Melanie Diaz and Octavia Spencer. And this was one of Octavia Spencer's performances after she won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for her role in a movie that's blanking in my mind right now. If you can excuse me for just a second, The Help. I was going to call it the Nanny Diaries. Good thing I didn't. But this was after Octavia Spencer won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for The Help. Melanie Diaz is also a good and underrated actress, but she's still getting parts. But this is the movie that put Michael Jordan at least on the critical map. And I think he's been an A-lister ever since. He is a really, really good actor. And he has been since his days on the show The Wire. There are other movies that are coming to Netflix on Friday, November 13th. One big one is actually a film that's called Jingle Jangle, A Christmas Journey. And this one I'm very excited to see. It's not related to the character's Jingle Jangle from The Year Without a Santa Claus, at least not that I know. It's primarily an African-American film, and it stars Forrest Whitaker, Keegan-Michael Key, and Felicia Rashad, amongst other people. It is about an imaginary world that comes to life in the holiday tale of an eccentric toy maker, his adventurous granddaughter, and a magical invention that has the power to change their lives forever. This is a movie I will definitely see next week, and I will let you know what I think on next week's show. This does not sound at all like a Hallmark original movie or Hallmark Christmas movie. This sounds like it's got a ton of imagination in it and a great cast nonetheless. It's directed by and written by David E. Talbert, who is an African-American. He is 54 years old, and his other credits before Jingle Jangle, A Christmas Story include having written the film Almost Christmas, which is one of those family reunion movies. He also wrote the screenplay for a film called First Sunday, which starred Ice Cube, Cat Williams, and Tracy Morgan, amongst other actors. Among his directorial credits before Jingle Jangle, he directed El Camino Christmas, which I didn't see. He also directed Almost Christmas, which he also wrote. El Camino Christmas sounds relatively familiar. It's a movie starring Dax Shepard, Kirkwood Smith, and Luke Grimes, and features an appearance by Tim Allen. That was a Netflix original back in 2017. And yeah, so he's not a stranger to Christmas films. He's just a stranger to, I guess you could say, films that have a science fiction or fantasy element to them. But this movie, I don't want to build my hopes up too much, but it looks like a wonderful presence. It has an amazing cast, and I will let you know what I think on next week's show.
Well, that's all the time I have for this episode of Words on Film. I always love talking about movies, and I hope you liked what you heard. If you did, please subscribe and rate the show and leave comments if you can. I would love to get your feedback, even if it's more criticism than praise. This has been Words on Film. I'm Dan Burke, and until my next episode, I'll see you at the movies.